Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show, where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do all kinds of other fun stuff that you'll just love, and you'll be so glad you tuned in. We're so glad to have you back. Here as I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer, who will be bringing you the cool sounds of the Weekly Worldview and all of that. I want to start with Ford. When I was in high school, I drove a 1972 Delta 88 with a 455 rocket engine. And one of my best friends, Tom, he drove nothing but Fords. He had a stepside Ford pickup truck the stepside, it said stepside, so we would stand on it and we'd drive through the fields. I got ran over by it one time. It ran over my thighs, but I happened to be in very soft caliche dust. So otherwise, I'd probably be paralyzed. And then he had a fastback Mustang, a 72 fastback Mustang. And we put a killer stereo in that thing. But anyway, me and Tom, for years, all of our years in high school, argued about the quality of the Ford Motor Vehicle Company. And it's become something of a running joke in my entire life, as a matter of fact. Whenever we're driving around, if there's a vehicle dead on the side of the highway, before anyone in the car can figure out what it is, I always say, I bet that's a Ford. 9 times out of 10, I am correct. So CNBC reported last week that Ford has recalled nearly 1.4 million mid-sized cars because the steering wheel can fall off. Now, there are defects, and I understand that there can be problems, mistakes can be made, but when you manufacture a vehicle from which the steering wheel may become detached, let's just say next time Ford goes bankrupt, let's not bail them out. Anyway, it affected the full spectrum of Ford vehicles, by the way, from the lowly Ford Fusion, driven by the average sophomore girl in high school, all the way up to the Lincoln MKZ being driven by the 65-year-old going through his second childhood. He always wanted a Lincoln. Anyway, 2014 through 2018, if you've got a Fusion or an MKZ or anything in between, the steering wheel could become detached at any moment. And so you might want to get down there to the dealership. Turns out the steering wheel bolts loosen over time, which was not how it was intended. But it's a Ford. So, anyway, Tom, if you're listening, I'm very sorry to rub your nose in it, but, well, there you go. All right. Now, see, Tom had several cars because he had a job after school sacking groceries. And the town I grew up in was so small that there were only 4 jobs available after school. And Tom and his brother and a couple other guys held those jobs their whole time in high school. So none of the other kids could have after school jobs. Because Tom and a few other guys, they already had them. Not that we would have done all that well. There was a joke with Tom that he was going for his sacker's pension. I think he sacked groceries at Mattyowski's. No, it wasn't Mattyowski's. Which store was it? Oh, boy, that escapes me. There were 2 grocery stores in my hometown. 2 grocery stores and like 11 Churches of Christ. And then 1 Methodist church. Anyway, Tom held the grocery sacker's record. I think he sacked groceries from 6th grade through 12th grade. And that's not an exaggeration. He may own the store now. I don't know. But I wonder if he's still driving a Ford, and I wonder if he has a 2014 through 2018. Anything from a Fusion to a Lincoln, Tom, take it in. Get it checked out. All right. Let's leave Ford alone. Do we want to talk about the March for Our Lives? We'll get to that later. First, I want to talk about a hero. Now everybody gets called a hero these days. Here in Denver on local television, they have the Channel 9 Everyday Hero. And literally every day they call someone a hero who is, well, you know, they're decent people. But it's hardly heroic. You know, a woman gets stood up on her roofing job, her roof is leaking, her neighbors patch the roofer, and suddenly they're heroes. Well, it's a decent thing to do, but I don't know that I'd call it heroic. On the other hand, we go to the BBC, where Lieutenant Colonel Arnaud Beltrame was shot and stabbed after he traded places with one of the captives following a shooting spree by a maniacal Islamic maniac in France. This maniac Islamic shot a bunch of people, carjacked a bunch of people, was basically just hell-bent on destruction to the point of even suicide. And at one point, the French police had either negotiated or, I wasn't following it in real time, they had either negotiated or arranged for the escape of a number of hostages, but the Islamists kept one woman hostage, and Lieutenant Colonel Arnaud Beltrame volunteered to switch places with the hostage. And as soon as he did, the terrorists killed him. At which point, the French police and army opened fire and killed the terrorists. Now, this guy is a hero. That is a heroic thing. Colonel Arnaud's brother, Cedric, said, quote, "He gave his life for strangers. He must have known that he didn't really have a chance, and if that doesn't make him a hero, I don't know what would." Unquote. And that's very true. This guy is a hero. The Islamist gunman was eventually shot and killed by police. Now that's a hero. And we salute Lieutenant Colonel Arnaud Beltrame out there in southern France. Wow. That was intense. All right, the March for Our Lives. Well, maybe we'll get to the March for Our Lives later. First, let's go and march for our life in Chicago, where people march for their lives every day. It's called going to work. They at least fear for their lives. As a matter of fact, the violence is so intense in Chicago that there's a program at the Cook County Stroger Hospital. Did I get that right? I said the Cook County Stroger Hospital in the Great Lakes region. The Navy wants to familiarize medics with combat injuries. And so they're working now to formalize a pilot program that's been tested there in Chicago for 3 years, rotating newly enlisted hospital corpsmen. Those are the combat medics for the Navy and the Marine Corps for 4 to 6 weeks. Okay, I can't read. For eight, for 6 to 8 weeks through Stroger Hospital's Trauma Center, the 14-bed trauma unit treats over 6,000 trauma patients a year. About 30% of them are gunshot wounds. So in order to prepare the medics for combat, they're rotating them through a hospital in Chicago, because many of the people who come in have penetrating, life-threatening wounds akin to those on the battlefield. Yeah. Yes, the Navy cites the high number of gunshot victims that makes Stroger Hospital an attractive place to prepare medics for what they might see in combat. So about 30% of the patients that come through the trauma unit there have gunshot wounds. That 30%, I said. The national average is 4.2%. So about 4 out of 100 people who come through a trauma bay in any town USA have been shot. In Chicago, at least at Stroger, 30 out of 100 have been shot. Let's see. We've got a quote from Dr. Farhan Bukhari. He chairs the trauma and burn surgery unit. He says, "The experience here can't be replicated elsewhere unless you have a major land invasion." You don't want to read that, right? If you're living in that neighborhood, similar to a major land invasion, if we study other wars in similar algorithms of gunshot wounds and whatnot. So there you have it, Chicago. Well, I guess you could say this is one good thing coming out of the bloodbath in Chicago. We have medics in the Marine Corps and the Navy who are at least more prepared for the combat wounds because, well, they've seen something like a major land invasion on the south side of Chicago. All right, so should we get to the March for Our Lives? Maybe later. Let's go to the opioid, what do they call it? The opioid crisis. Yes. You all know that there's a crisis with opioids. How many people a day? Well, let's get to this now because this is from the Justice File. The French press agency is reporting that five Manhattan doctors have been indicted for accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes from a pharmaceutical company in exchange for prescribing opioids. Yes, it was quite the racket they had going. Two employees of the drug maker Insys pled guilty and then participated in the investigation, turned state's evidence. The doctors got arrested. Turns out they were prescribing fentanyl in exchange for bribes that were paid in the form of speaker fees, which is a popular way to bribe doctors. And so they've been arrested. According to court papers, the doctors prescribed millions of dollars worth of this fentanyl spray. Fentanyl is it's a synthetic opioid. And they could get 20 years in prison. What else? Anything? In 2016, listen to this. Almost 64,000 people died of drug overdoses in the United States. Now, how many people were killed in car accidents? I think that's under 30,000 a year now as cars become safer. But as cars have become safer, people have become less and less safe and more drugged out. So in my opinion, if you have prescribed millions of dollars worth of opioids in the midst of a crisis where 64,000 people are dying, these two doctors, along with everyone in the company who was involved, they should all be tried. That if an investigation were carried out properly, it would be quite possible. In fact, I'll bet it would be quite likely that you could connect these people to actual deaths. And at that point, they should be put on trial for manslaughter. And if convicted, they should be put to death. All of the people involved. And then you know how many doctors would be writing fake scripts? And you know how many sales reps would be bribing doctors with speaker fees? Overnight, it would be none. These would be the last four people that would have to be sacrificed in the opioid crisis. Well, maybe not the absolute last four, but pretty darn close to the last four, at least on the dealing end. But is that going to happen? No. They could get a maximum of 20 years in prison. My guess is none of them will go to prison. And the opioid crisis, 63,500 last year, or that was 2016. The day that these doctors and these sales reps and these employees, whatever they were, of the drug maker Insys, the day they walk out of court, if we look at the previous 12 months, there will be more than 63,500 people who have died in the ongoing opioid crisis. And everybody wonders, what can we do? What can we do? What should we do? Well, Donald Trump suggested, I think I mentioned it last time we were together, that I've got the story here from Breitbart. Trump says we need to get tough on the opioid epidemic. That toughness includes the death penalty, he says. Let's see. He's vowed to empower law enforcement to crack down on the supply of drugs, including prescription drug reforms and targeting doctors. Now, I wonder if he put that together, the death penalty for doctors who write bogus prescriptions. My guess is Donald Trump is not in favor of that because he barely knows right from wrong in the most grotesque of instances. Generally, he's fairly clueless on right and wrong. So he would not, if he were pressed, do you mean the death penalty for doctors who write bogus prescriptions and people overdose? If pressed, he would say, no, that's not what he meant because he doesn't know what he means. He's also suggested a federal lawsuit against some of the companies that manufacture opioids, which I frankly disagree with a blanket lawsuit. I'm for investigation. I'm for tracing these drugs to specific deaths and trying these people for voluntary manslaughter. And if guilty, of course, they should get the death penalty. But another thing I wanted to ask, Don, as long as we're on the topic, So of innocent people dying, what about the innocent people who are dying in the abortion mills across the country, Don? Because you're never going to be able to insist on the death penalty for the guilty as long as you maintain our national loss of moral authority as it relates to the killing of the innocent. Go on, put those guitars away, boys. We don't have all day with that. So now we juxtaposition Donald Trump's calling for the death penalty in the opioid crisis with the story on the doctors that have actually been indicted. Yeah, and now we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about justice a little bit more, because I was frankly shocked at this story, and I'm rarely shocked anymore. But apparently, Herman Bell, a convicted domestic terrorist. You probably don't remember. I didn't remember because this goes back to 1971. Herman Bell was one of three members of the Black Revolutionary Army who lured police officers Joseph Pagliantini and Waverly Jones to a Harlem housing project with a phony 911 call back in 1971. As the police officers approached, the three men opened fire, killing them. But it wasn't, no, it's worse than that. The first cop, Waverly Jones, he was killed instantly. The second officer, Joseph Pagliantini, was shot 12 times but was alive and was begging for his life when Herman Bell shot him to death with the officer's own gun. Now, these terrorists were arrested and they were duly convicted, but at the time, the death penalty was illegal at the time because the Supreme Court had gone completely and utterly insane. And so they were sentenced to life in prison, but it was never said life without parole. They never said that. And so guess what? Herman Bell was paroled. He won parole, and he will walk out of prison in the next few weeks a free man. Someone who shot another human being who was begging for his life to death, let alone a police officer. So talk about losing the moral authority to speak out about justice in any way. There's not a single person in the United States government, from the president down to the local dog catcher, who retains any minuscule amount of moral authority to execute justice. And that's one of the reasons the country is going insane and going to hell in a handbasket, frankly. This guy's going to walk out of prison. That's just shocking. Unbelievable. All right. And because justice is the way it is, because if you murder someone, there's as good a chance you'll get out of jail as you'll be executed. There's a better chance that you will one day get out of jail than you will be executed. And while you're in jail, you don't have to work really hard. You get fed every day. You can entertain yourself with movies and TV. You can take drugs. You can play cards and dominoes. You can get tattoos. So murder becomes just one of several options when people are deciding how to proceed in satisfying their wants and their desires. For example, from the New York Post, Michael Ward, who had at least a dozen prior arrests in the state of Virginia, traveled from Maryland to New York on a crime spree across three boroughs and Nassau County. This was just a couple weeks ago. He first punched a 77-year-old man in the South Bronx, knocked him down, stole $20 from a 77-year-old man. He stole a white Acura, drove to Brooklyn, fatally struck a 50-year-old man who was walking across the street in Williamsburg. He ended up on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, where he stole $20 and a Honda Odyssey from a female. And about 11 minutes later, he carjacked another person driving a black Acura by punching that person in the face and taking the vehicle. He took that vehicle uptown, sideswiped a pedestrian, and he was only spotted by license plate reading technology that all the liberals freak out about, that they hate. They talk about their privacy. I want my privacy. To get your privacy when there's a maniac sideswiping, running people over. Anyway, they spotted him with the license plate reading technology. He finally ended up in Great Neck, Long Island, where he attacked two men with a baseball bat. Police attempted to subdue him with a stun gun, but they were unable to stop him. And he wouldn't put down his bat. And so finally they shot and killed him. This whole thing took place between 8:30 p.m. and 10:30 a.m. the next morning. So just a maniac on a killing spree, basically. No rhyme, no reason, but there you have it. That's the state of domestic tranquility, at least in Nassau County and New York City, circa 2018. And because there's no justice, none of these lowlifes have the fear of God in them. And so they do things like this. They go on killing sprees. It's just shocking. And so, should we get to the March for Our Lives? No, let's not go to the March for Our Lives quite yet. Let's go deeper into the domestic tranquility file. Deputies were called at 1:40 a.m. on last Friday because a colleague of a young lady named Camille Baia had called authorities after finding her covered in blood in the Palm Beach, Florida area. When police asked her why she was covered with blood, she said, quote, "I killed my mother and I need help," unquote. She told them that her mother was in the garage and she handed the house keys to the police officers. The police officers entered the house and there they found the body of Francisca Montiero Baia, 55 years old. She had been slashed in her head, arms, chest, and stomach. And on top of a cardboard box were the mother's eyeballs, which had been removed from their sockets by her daughter using glass shards. So she attacked her mother with glass shards, slashed her to death, and cut out her eyeballs. Police say that the younger Baia said that she had been smoking cannabis. And then she mumbled and ran around screaming, "I'm a murderer, I'm a murderer." And that's the state. What's that now?
She's sober now.
Yeah, I guess she sobered up. Yeah. She suspected the cannabis was laced with flaca or PCP, but there's an even chance that it was not laced with anything.
Yeah.
There's more than likely. And we would find out, but there will never be enough time for reporters to investigate this story any deeper, because in Palm Beach, there will be another bloodbath this week that will occupy the time of both the police and the news media, so that the underlying facts of this story will be generally lost to history until Judgment Day. Because you can, there's only so much bandwidth. And the massacres that are occurring on a daily basis just, well, it gets hard. I was, as I watched the local news this week, I watch the local news every night. I don't know why. It's an old habit that I think my parents ingrained into me. And it's one of the things that makes me an old guy. I watch the news. So I work with a bunch of younger people, and if we get back to the hotel or the Airbnb early enough, I like to click on the local news. And they look at me like I'm some kind of alien creature. Mostly because I want to see the crime stories. I don't know why. Well, I want to see the weather. That's the main thing, is I want to see the weather. But they say, you know, there's an app for that. And yeah, but anyway. That's kinda... there's a certain appeal to having another human being embarrass themselves by trying to predict the weather. It's fun. See, there's a little more sport to it than just watching an app. Where was I going with that, with the local news? Oh, so I'm watching the local news last week, and I would estimate that last week in the Denver metro area, there were 3 fatal shootings a day in the general metro area. And all of them last week seemed to be in Aurora for whatever reason, because a lot of them happen in Aurora. I think Aurora is the largest actual city in the metro area. It might even be bigger than Denver. And it's got its rough parts, okay? So at one point, I saw the same officer, like a Tuesday night report about the latest bloodbath at a motel. And then I saw the same cop, it was like Thursday night, in front of a 7-Eleven, there was another fatal. And I thought to myself, how do the police possibly keep up with all this? How many police do we have? Because at the crime scene behind the officer, they've got the giant crime truck. And they've got the crime scene investigators, the CSI with the clean room outfits and the gloves, and they're doing, and I'm thinking, they have to do this 3 times a day? How do they possibly keep up? I felt sorry for them. It's got to be very difficult to keep up with the just an avalanche of bloodshed and murder. And that's not even to count the kidnappings and the beatings and the rapes and the burglaries and the armed robberies. How do they possibly keep up? You would think at some point that civilized people would petition the government and say, look, this has to stop. This is to the point of ridiculousness. We're going to end up with more people working in law enforcement than we have working in private sector industry, as crime will become the number one industry. But crime is down, I hear. It's down. Well, when I watch the news, it doesn't look down to me. It looks like epidemic proportions, growing by leaps and bounds every day. And it's almost as if the government has actually built an industry around crime. And it employs a lot of people. A lot of people make their living in the crime industry. And in order for there to be a crime industry, a booming criminal industry, well, you need criminals. And so maybe by accident, or maybe more nefarious conspiracies, the government has basically made our culture into one that promotes criminal behavior through a lack of justice and sound criminal punishment. Because if we wanted it to end, we could end most of it virtually overnight. But then a lot of people would be out of work. And then, of course, we got the robots coming. So it should be a double whammy. You know, you end crime, and then the robots start doing everything. All right. But that's immoral for the government to... It's immoral for anyone to make their living in the criminal industry. It's immoral because it's unnecessary. And so I understand that it's a reality that we have to deal with right now because of the situation on the ground. I understand that. And I'm not saying that if you take a job as a police officer, you're doing something immoral. I'm saying that the governing officials in charge are immoral. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I always love that cymbal that sounds like the metal bar. Tink, tink, tink. I always dug that. Good stuff. All right, but we got to go back to justice here. I've got a story here from fastcompany.com, which I'm not familiar with, but I double and triple checked the story. This is real. Police in Raleigh, North... Raleigh? Okay, golly. I've got something going on with my between my mouth and my brain. I don't know what's going on. I've got a problem doing the show, and it lies somewhere between the seat of this chair and this desk. Police in Raleigh, North Carolina, have presented Google with warrants to obtain data from the mobile phones from not just specific suspects who were in a crime scene area, but from the mobile phones of all of the people in the area. So a crime was committed, the police are trying to solve the crime, and they tell Google, we want the data from all the phones that were in the area because we want to solve this crime. And some people are upset about this. They say that this violates the Fourth Amendment because it's an unreasonable search. And Google has not revealed whether it has complied with the request from the police for data from not only from the phones of the people who are suspects, victims, people in the immediate area, but everybody in the area. And I personally, I'm okay with that. If the police wanted to take my data without even telling me because it might help them solve a crime, I'm cool with that. I don't think that's unreasonable. And I think that your geographic location on the planet at any given time, that's public information. I mean, unless you're cloaked in some Klingon device that hides you from everyone, which I don't think anybody was. So I think the police have every right to access every bit of information to solve a crime. And I don't think they have to ask people's permission either. I know they could use it against me, and I could end up in a concentration camp, in a re-education camp. Well, if we get to that, this isn't going to matter much at all. So I'm not too worried about that. And anyway, that would be on them. And then I would get even in heaven. You see, that's the thing. I have an eternal perspective. Yes, I could end up in a concentration camp and a re-education camp because I gave the government too much authority. But, you know, that's just this life. And this life is going to seem really, really short. Remember that old song? When we've been there 10,000 years, right? It's as though it's just begun. Well, it's true. So if you end up in a concentration camp for a couple of decades or whatever I've got left, you know, I'll make up for it on the other side. So I would rather do right, even if it puts myself and my personal liberty and my privacy, even if it puts that at risk, I'd rather do right. I'd rather help the police solve a crime than not. And so I think we should all be all for this. Even though I know we don't trust the police can be bad, the government can be bad. I understand all that. But you still have to do right, and you still have to acknowledge what is right, because all authority proceeds from God, downhill to men. And if men corrupt that, that's on them. It doesn't change the principles of justice in that the police should have the ability in real time to solve crimes as they happen, hopefully, before too many people get hurt. Now, a related story. Now, this one is a little more complicated, and I'm not sure where I come down on this. This is from our new technophile. A Silicon Valley startup is in trouble with the FCC because they launched satellites without permission. The company is called Swarm Technologies. They've been developing ultra-small satellites called Space Bees. They claim they're trying to create a worldwide network technology to offer a much lower cost solution with wide-ranging applications in their tiny mini satellites. Now, they asked the FCC for permission to launch, and the FCC said they were unable to grant their application for facilities to deploy and operate four spacecraft that are smaller than 10 centimeters in one of their three dimensions. So the FCC says if it's smaller than 10 centimeters in any one of its three dimensions, you can't put it up there. Why? Because we might lose track of it, and it might hit something else. It could become a problem. Well, the company went back to the FCC and said that what we will do is we will add Ku-band radar reflectors to make our tiny little bitty satellites more visible. And the FCC said, but what if your satellite loses power? Then the radar reflectors don't work. We can't see it. It's going to be a problem. We cannot give you permission to launch. Swarm satellites, it has less than 1/10,000th the mass and power of other satellite systems, and it's 400 times cheaper. But the FCC says it's too small. It could be a problem. And I think I might agree with them. Well, anyway, they launched them anyways, which is pretty bold. They launched them anyways without permission from the FCC because they're, well, they want to put their satellites up there. And now the FCC is quite upset, and they've revoked Swarm's approval for its next mission in April, citing an apparent unauthorized launch and operation of these four Space B satellites. Well, quite often I am inspired, and I honor people who defy the government's immoral directives. But I think in this case, the FCC might be correct, that if you start putting up stuff that's too small to see, well, you could hit somebody else's satellite, and then we've got a problem. Or you could hit a manned space vehicle, you could kill somebody. So I would have to look more deeply into it, but in this case, I think the company should have spent a little bit more time and effort to find a solution, because there probably is a solution besides just launching your satellites without permission. And I think the government has the authority to regulate satellites because they can hit each other and they can even fall out of the sky. So I think that's an infrastructure issue. And I think the government is justified in regulating that. And apparently these four Space B satellites, they're up there. They're up there right now. And if you read the rest of the article, they sound really, really cool. It sounds like this is the future of satellites. Smaller and cheaper. Maybe we'll have disposable satellites. They go around for a while. They're designed to burn up when they come back in the atmosphere. And we'll launch them. Sixth graders will launch satellites someday as part of school projects. They'll be dirt cheap. But we have to figure out the whole solution around the issues outlined in that article. I think so. All right. Now, speaking of sixth graders, and then this is not on. So maybe now we get to the March for Our Lives. No. Yeah, let's do the March for Our Lives. Did you see the wall-to-wall coverage on the very ironically titled March for Our Lives? Ironically organized by Planned Parenthood and other post-abortive, delusional, evil, wicked, socialist, corrupt people and organizations. Because it's all the same group of post-aborts and lesbians who run all the Women's March, MoveOn.org, Occupy, Planned Parenthood. Is there anyone I missed? Oh, Black Lives Matter. There's all the same bunch of socialist, post-abortive wenches and lesbians and homosexuals who run all these organizations. And the March for Our Lives, if you saw the wall-to-wall coverage on Saturday, the first thing I noted was that I saw bigger crowds at Tea Party rallies. So, and the March for Our Lives was dwarfed by the actual annual March for Life. Dwarfed. Not even close. Not even close. But no wall-to-wall coverage for the March for Life. It gets 5 seconds on Fox. That's what the March for Life gets every year. But then again, when you've been marching for 45 years with no end in sight, eventually, I think we all get a little bit tired of it. Just a note to the March for Life people. Movements are supposed to move towards something. The people who organize and run the March for Life, I've lost sight of what it is you're actually doing. Besides raising money for the March for Life. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of mean of me. But in my opinion, the March for Our Lives, which, by the way, Planned Parenthood, here's what I wrote when I first started reviewing the news this week. I wrote that organizers like Planned Parenthood will make sure that the children are surrounded by armed guards. And they were. There was no shootings at the March for Our Lives all across the country. Why? Because each group of little children and post-abortive lesbians and freaks and other assorted deviants were surrounded by armed security the entire time. That's why. So there's another irony. In fact, I saw on a website they had a montage of armed officers from all the different marches all over the country. There wasn't a safer place to be in America last Saturday than at one of these marches for our lives. But what is it? Why is this happening? Well, we all know the gun control angle. Okay, I don't have to harp on that. You can get that from Hannity for 3 straight hours every day in between coverage of Robert Mueller if you want to hear about the gun control angle. The gun control angle is so obvious that I'm bored with it. We all know that. We know the gun grabbers are going to take every opportunity to try to outlaw weapons and bump stocks and high-capacity magazines. All of that. That's so obvious I'm bored with it. I saw something much deeper and actually much more sad. And I actually felt sadness. Because here you have the survivors of the abortion holocaust are now terrified. And they're crying out to their parents in fear and confusion, genuine fear, because they're afraid of being killed. And their parents, and when I say their parents, I mean their parents, their teachers, their pastors, their governing officials, their mayors, their governors, their president, their senators, their congressmen. These kids' parents have no solution. They offer these children no solution. Yeah, they get them to mimic the chants, never again, down with the NRA, hey, hey, ho, ho, the NRA's got to go. Yeah, they can get the kids to say all that, and they can move the political football down the field towards some further regulation of the Second Amendment. But what they're not giving these children who are genuinely scared, these kids are genuinely scared. They're not giving them any real solution or any hope that they'll actually be safe. Instead, they just did this. And so it's, I wanted to be angry at these kids. And I am angry at the organizers for manipulating these kids. But for the most part, what I feel towards these poor children being abused in the public schools every day, psychologically and spiritually, and then having to actually fear for your life every time someone drops a book, people probably hit the deck and crawl under their desk. So I didn't feel anger. What I felt was genuine concern and real sadness. Welcome back, folks. I'm Doug McBurney. I'm your host. This brings us to the next item that I wanted to talk about today. Teen suicide. I just talked about the kids, and they're genuinely afraid, and nobody's really offering them an answer for their fear and their confusion and their sadness. And then suicide rate, according to USA Today, an article, not really according to them, according to the latest data analysis available from the CDC, the teen suicide rate is up 70% between 2006 and 2016. It's 70% in 10 years. Now, for whatever reason, USA Today separates out the suicide rate for white children and black children. And I really don't understand why they do that. Because it's a negligible difference. For white kids, it was up 70%. For black kids, it was black. Wait a second. Yeah, black kids, it was 77%. So both suicide rates are at epidemic rates of increase. Horrifying. This should be a national health crisis. I mean, yes, opioids are an issue, but is this not, this is significant. Anyway, it's not 1964, USA Today. You don't have to separate out the white kids and the black kids. Can't we just be concerned about the suicide rate among the kids? I don't understand that. That really annoyed me about this article. Yeah, it's because the people who run USA Today are a bunch of race baiters. That's all. So anyway, whether you're white, black, brown, yellow, green, orange, or anything in between, the suicide rate is up nearly 100% over the past 10 years. It should be shocking to everyone. A study of pediatric hospitals released last year found admissions of patients age 5 to 17 for suicidal thoughts and actions more than doubled from 2008 to 2015. That means more than a 100% increase. The top group at risk for suicide, white males between the ages of 14 and 21. Experts cite myriad reasons. You want to hear them? You want to hear from the experts? Here's a myriad reasons from the experts. Yeah. Mental health screening. Poor access to mental health services. Resistance to admitting they have a problem. Opioid-addicted parents. A polarized political environment and poverty. And then the experts say there's the simple fact that they're teenagers. That's one expert opinion. That just the fact that they're teenagers means they're more at risk for suicide. You know, that was never true. That was never true before probably the 1950s, 1960s. It was never true that teenagers were thought to be mentally unstable and possibly at risk for suicide. It was the furthest thing from anyone's mind to start worrying about teenagers and suicide. There was a time when the only people that you were worried about for suicide were the alcoholics, the drug addicts, the guys coming back from the war, and people who were terminally ill. Those were the people who were considered to be at risk for suicide. But now the average teenager in America is considered to be in a more high-risk group than any of the ones I've just reeled off, except maybe the junkies. They might be at a higher risk. It just never was this way. One other one from the experts, social media. Yeah. All right. So you know what? I'm not an expert. I'm going to admit that right up front. I'm not an expert, nor do I try to pawn myself off as an expert. But I will tell you the reason suicides are up amongst teenagers is because of godlessness. Children raised without the fear and admonition of the Lord. They don't know where they came from. They don't know why they're here, and they don't know where they're going. And that can drive someone out of their mind eventually. It leads to mental illness and even thoughts and actions, even actual suicide. It's godlessness. And you can tell me, you can argue all day long about how you were abused in the Catholic Church and how horrible religion is, and I understand all of that. I know that that's all true, that every human institution is filled with humans who are capable of hurting one another and of twisting the truth and of giving even God a bad name. I understand all that. But you cannot tell me that before, in our country, when there was a generally godly environment, where people were at least required to give lip service to the idea of biblical morality, you can't tell me that things were worse, especially for teenagers back in those days. It's just, it was never the case. It's godlessness. And that godlessness, that exacerbates all of these other legitimate issues that the, except poverty. I don't take that as a legitimate issue. That's not, and failing to admit they have a problem. These kids don't know they have a problem because you idiotic parents and adults have brainwashed them into believing that there's no God. So they don't, how can they admit they have a problem? You won't admit they have a problem. The problem is adults won't admit they have a problem. And so their kids are a mess. Oh, another one that's not legit, a polarized political environment. The kids don't care that mom and dad hate Donald Trump. That's not it. Right? It's not a Gore v. Bush drove him over the edge. Come on. Get out of here with that. But social media, that is a legitimate problem when you're surrounded by a bunch of godless little heathens. Anyway. All right. How much time? I have enough time for this. This is from a new file we have. This is from the What a Pig file. And the headliner is Katy Perry. Benjamin Glaze was a 19-year-old cashier from Enid, Oklahoma. And he auditioned for a television show called American Idol, where he was going to sing and become a star. Well, he went up on stage. Let me try to get this. He was asked by one of the deviant pervert judges. He was asked before his audition, have you ever kissed a girl? And he said that he had not. He's 19 years old. He's just a kid. He says, I've never kissed a girl. I've never been in a relationship. And I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship. That's pretty cool to hear that from a 19-year-old kid. You don't hear that very often. Well, after he said that, this disgusting, vile, festering pig, Katy Perry, stood up and said to him, come here right now. She grabbed him, pulled him to her, and he tried to get her to kiss her, he tried to get her to kiss him on the cheek. Now I'm all confused. See, this transgenderism makes it hard to even read the news. Katy Perry was going to kiss the kid, and he turned his cheek so that she would kiss him on the cheek. But she swung her face toward him and kissed him square on the lips. This disgusting pig. Anyway, later on, his audition fell flat and he was rejected by the judges after this pig.
Isn't that a sexual harassment?
I think he's got a lawsuit here. In fact, I think he should sue her. She should be arrested, first of all. Well, he's 19. Yeah, still, that's sexual, yes, something.
Child abuse, huh?
Well, he's 19, so, but yeah, that's assault of some sort, yeah. Later on, he was asked, he said about it, and he said, you know, I wanted to save my first kiss for my first relationship. I wanted it to be special. He was asked if he would have done it if she would have asked him, would you kiss me? And he said, no, I would have said no. He said, I know a lot of guys would have said yes, but I wanted my first kiss to be special, and Katy Perry ruined it. What a pig.
Yeah.
That's from the What a Pig file. Anyway, a note to morally upright 19-year-old men. Don't go on American Idol, okay? I mean, Idol is in the title of the show. Do you need a bigger red flag than that? And Katy Perry, who is a direct spawn of Satan, works on that show. Anyway, you probably get syphilis in the green room just sitting around on that show. That's just awful. Now, I don't even know if I can do this. Reason number 1027 to keep your children out of the government schools. Disturbing allegations have come to light in a federal lawsuit filed in Grand Rapids, Michigan, by the parents of a boy who attended the Century Park Learning Center starting when he was 5 years old. So for whatever reason, this little Jimmy's parents chose to institutionalize him at the age of five in this government school. Well, the lawsuit claims that little Jimmy was abused. Four boys took Jimmy into the mudroom area of the classroom where they sodomized him and took photos on their school-issued iPads. And they circulated the pictures among... this is kindergarten. They circulated the pictures amongst the kids at the elementary school. Listen, this is so horrible. Dissemination of the photos to the other students led to continued harassment, forcing this boy to dig hiding places beneath the playground equipment where he would hide and cover himself with mulch to hide from the other kids. Just unbelievable. Oh, and that's what I wanted to point out. How do you think kids between the ages of what? Of fifth grade, what is that? How old? I'm sorry, 5 years old. These kids were like 5 to 8 years old. How is it that they do this? It's because their parents are exposing them to pornography. That's how. Or someone is. Maybe not the parents. Maybe the teachers. I don't know. Older kids.
And then they get to the YouTube and stuff.
It's just, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, the ubiquity of pornography will destroy this country. You cannot treat sex as a recreational sport and have a civilization. It does not work. It does not work. Sex is an extremely powerful emotional and spiritual experience, far above and beyond the physical act. And when it's treated with disrespect and misused, it kills people. People kill themselves and other people more over sexual immorality than anything else. So anyway, so we call for the death penalty for all pornographers here on the Weekly Worldview. Of course, only after they're arrested and duly tried in a court of law and convicted. Reason number 1028, a school district in New Jersey suspended two high school students after Snapchat pictures showed them at a gun range after school. Now, the pictures were not threatening or scary. They just snapped pictures of themselves shooting target practice. And when they went back to school, they were not permitted to enter the class. And the school district follows, in New Jersey. The school district follows the Safe Schools Initiative and Zero Tolerance for Guns Act, which enforces zero tolerance policy for any students who have weapons in their possession on or off school grounds at any time. So they make guns so scary. They take the gun and they take, instead of making it, it's a gun as a tool for doing a variety of things. One of them is having fun trying to hit targets better than your friend. You could have a little competition. You could defend yourself. You could hunt. But they make the gun into this all-powerful temptation, really, for the mentally unbalanced. Anyway, these two guys could face a possible one-year suspension. So the good side of this, number one, they were not allowed back into class. That was a good outcome. Second, they could be suspended for a year. So they'll be released from the institution, possibly for as long as a year. And at that point, maybe their parents will come to their senses and decide not to institutionalize their teenage boys. Now, finally, what's that? They're going to end up where?
Hannity.
They'll end up on Hannity, no doubt. They're great Americans, heroes. All right, now we have to go quickly before we run out of time to the science. Really, file? Where apparently we will not be hearing from Stephen Hawking any longer. Uh-oh. At least not live, because he assumed room temperature. It was a couple weeks ago, I think, now. Anyway, let's see. Before he died, Stephen Hawking had a final warning to humanity. He said, humans must leave Earth in the next 200 years if we want to survive. We could be wiped out by a disaster such as an asteroid strike, artificial intelligence, or an alien invasion, overpopulation, human aggression, climate change, deforestation, decimation of animal species, greenhouse gas emissions, or Donald Trump. These are the risks for annihilation. Little did Mr. Hawking know that he would die rather pathetically in a wheelchair, defecating all over himself as he slipped into the great beyond. And it wasn't nearly as exciting as any of these things for Steve-O. No. They came in and they wiped the poop off him and they put him in a box. That's what they did, yeah. Let's see, anything else from Steve? What do we have here? Astronomers estimate that there is a reasonable chance of an Earth-like planet existing in the habitable zone of Alpha Centauri's three-star system. Ancient alien theorists say yes. All right, Steve-O. One more from Steve. As we go out here, Steve, who died at the age of 76, was co-author to a mathematical paper in which he sought to prove the so-called multiverse theory. This theory imagines the existence of many separate universes other than our own. Yeah, this is according to CNBC. In the paper, Hawking predicted how our universe would eventually fade to darkness as the stars run out of energy. He proposed that scientists might be able to find alternate universes by using probes on spaceships. I'm not sure how that would work, but he was a genius, so... he had before this paper, which is being peer-reviewed right now, what are the odds it'll be published and that he wins a Nobel Prize? I think the odds are 100% that Stephen Hawking will finally get that Nobel Prize, no matter how inane or mathematically ridiculous this paper is. Because now they're to the point of worship with Stephen Hawking. So they have to give it to him. Before he wrote in this paper that our universe would fade out as the stars ran out of energy, his previous theory was that the Earth would turn into a giant ball of fire by the year 2600, and he had the math for that. But for whatever reason, he went the complete, total opposite way. And I thought that wasn't acceptable in math. But apparently, if you're Stephen Hawking, you can get away with it. All right. All right. Bye-bye, Steve. We'll see you on Judgment Day. This is, I'm Doug McBurney, and I forgot how to end the show. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at American Right to Life. And of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview, here in the studios, here in the bowels of the McBurney compound, the boiler room. So glad to have had you. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.